Hi, everybody. My name's Beth Flora, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Wow. Happy Founders Day, 81 years. Amazing. Woo! I'm going to give you Mel. Adjust the mic. You need the seat back a little?
You good?
Yeah. God, I'm glad to sit in this seat. Hi, my name is Mel Berger. I'm an alcoholic. And I guess I have two things I've been invited to hear to tell my own personal story. And then also to comment about AA in Akron, because I think Akron is a very special city. The things that happened here were very important to the founding and sobriety of AA. I came to Akron, and who is that guy talking there? I came to Akron in 1952 just to spend a day, and I met Bill Dodson. Actually, I had met Bill Dodson a time before when he spoke up at Pontiac, Michigan, where I was then living. And he took me around the city here. All I really knew about Akron was that they had the Soapbox Derby here. I remember seeing one out in Nebraska, where I grew up, in 1940. And then I also knew they made tires here, and somebody told me they also made condoms here. I don't know if that was true or not. Why did I say that? I have a little... I've written some books, and I also do a little bit of poetry, and I write limericks. Now, I didn't write the one about the man from Nantucket. I didn't write that. But I wrote one about myself, and it's kind of sums up what happened to me. A fearful young man from Nebraska drank amounts that would surely aghast ya. He'd take any old slop and drink till he'd dop and finally fell on his aska. Not bad, huh? Well, anyway, I guess to start out with a story, I was, I'm 90 years old now, and... my wife is somewhere here in the audience, and we've been married 55 years. We have four grown sons, and our children rather, three sons and one daughter, and one of our sons is here. I don't know where he is, but we also had two of our children who graduated from Kent State. So we came over this way quite often. But anyway, I look back on growing up in Nebraska, and I used to kind of blame Nebraska for my troubles. I felt if I'd been born in some other place, I would have had a better growing up and wouldn't have had so much trouble. I used to say, if they ever give the world an enema, Nebraska would be a good place to stick the hose. But I've changed my views now, and I've often gone back to Nebraska to the group where that's where I finally got sober. Now, in October of 1948, I was living in Ventura, California, and I was working in the oil fields, and my drinking had really gotten me in a lot of difficulty with myself. And the AA was getting a lot of publicity then, and so one night I sat down and wrote a letter. They had a box number there in Ventura. And a couple days later, a man called me, and he took me over to another member's house. And that member was from Akron. His name was Carl Scott. He's passed on now. And his wife's name was Nellie. And then a little later, I met a fellow, their son-in-law, who was one of the first 200 members of AA. And I see there's a list that kind of floats around and with 200 names on it, and his name is there. So I didn't realize it, but I was getting in on the history of AA right at the start. Now, that didn't help me keep continuously sober. I had to, it took me 13 months to establish what has turned out to be continuous sobriety. I had more trouble during that 13 months. I wound up back in Nebraska, living with my mother and stepdad. And one morning, I'd been drunk for about a week or two, and I was sitting at the kitchen table drinking a bottle of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Now, that was my last drink, but I didn't know it at the time. And I saw the other day that the Pabst people are still doing pretty well without my help. But anyway, she talked me into admitting myself to the state hospital, which was on a hill overlooking my hometown. And by gosh, I agreed to it. And I spent 7 weeks in that state hospital. At first, I felt real bad that I'd admitted myself to such a place, but that's where I got back in AA, and I've been sober ever since. And so that was really a good move. They've closed most of the state hospitals now. Nobody could admit himself like I did that time. So I was very, very fortunate. Well, I stayed around Nebraska for a while, and then I moved out to Michigan, and I lived in Pontiac, Michigan, and Detroit for a while, but eventually wound up in Toledo. I've lived in Toledo for 43 years. Hey, we got some Toledo people here. And it's really been a great place for me. I belong to the Rab Road Group, which is west of town, about 10 miles. And once in a while, somebody comes from Akron or someplace. And it's always nice to see people visiting our group. It's a very fine group. But I believe in staying with the program. I don't believe that I could survive if I quit going to meetings. Now, when I first came in, I did have to go back out for a while. But I learned that if you're an alcoholic, there's no way that you're going to recover or get well or become a moderate or a controlled drinker. That just doesn't happen. My mother and dad, they were very good to me when I was having all this trouble. They had been divorced in 1935, and I always thought part of my problems was growing up in a broken family. But I don't think either one of them felt that I should have become an alcoholic. I think they resented it. I know towards the end of his life, I drove my father down to Kentucky. That's where he grew up, and he wanted to make one last visit to his old hometown there. And on the way back, he stopped and he bought a bottle of beer. And I bought a Pepsi. And I saw him just staring at that Pepsi. And I just felt he was going to say, "Now, Melvin, why can't you have a couple of beers like a man?" Something like that. He didn't say it, but I felt it was on his mind. But anyway, I had my Pepsi and we went on our way. And that was that. Let's see, where was I going to go with all of this? God, what a crowd. But why isn't that filled in the back? One of the things I wanted to talk about was knowing some of the pioneers of AA. I got to know Bill Wilson. In fact, I even helped write his biography, which is called Pass It On. If anybody here ever read Pass It On? What had happened?
Hold on a second. Is there a doctor? We need a doctor over there. I'm not sure what section that is. Oh, God. I'm sorry. What? 208. We need help at 208. What? What are they saying? Is it 206? Oh, shoot. I think up there. What do we do now? Everybody give the people room to help the person. Medics are there. Clear the way, please. Ready to go on?
Sure.
I think if the medics are there, Mel's going to continue on. Everybody, please give the medics room.
Is this all right? Okay. Well, anyway, I remember having a very unhappy growing up. I had an older sister who did everything right. She was a great student. Everybody liked her. She was elected to all the positions in school and everything. And I was considered a burnout. And I guess maybe I was kind of defiant and kind of played that role. And I didn't do very well with my studies. I dropped out of high school after about a year. I had about a year of credits, and I limped along for many years without a high school diploma. And finally, when I was 67 years old, they had an adult high school where I was living in Jackson, Michigan then. And I went to the adult high school, and I got a diploma. And then I enrolled in the community college and got a diploma there, And then I was transferred to Toledo. I was working for the Libyans Ford Company, and damned if I didn't get a bachelor's degree in Toledo, the University of Toledo. Now, I know the University of Toledo doesn't measure up to the University of Akron, but I still have the degree. But I discovered that a 50-year-old college graduate is like a 35-year-old virgin. Nobody cares anymore. These people that I met when I wrote this letter out in California, Carl Scott, he had worked here in the tire factories, and then they had moved out to California and retired. And his wife's name was Nellie. And by gosh, they took me to meetings, and they talked about the people here in Akron. So I was learning AA history in the first month I was in AA. I remember they talked about Bill Dotson, and they referred to him as the guinea pig. Oh, my. And some years later, I came to Akron here, and I met Bill Dotson, and I happened to mention that term, big guinea pig. And did his face darken? He didn't like that one bit. And I discovered that he had been at a big meeting, and a bunch of the old-timers were sitting back there on the dais, and Bill Wilson was giving a talk. And Bill got to the part about when he and Dr. Bob called on Bill Dotson, and he referred to him as the guinea pig. And I believe Bill Dotson had a resentment against Bill Wilson for the rest of his life about that, about being called the guinea pig. And he also, I noticed that he wasn't too favorable about Bill. He did take me around Akron here. We visited St. Thomas, and Sister Ignatia didn't happen to be there then. There was a Sister Merced who was running it. I had a wonderful conversation with her. But whenever Bill Wilson's name came up, he was kind of negative about it. So years later, I asked Bill Wilson if he felt Bill Dotson was kind of critical of him. And he said, well, Bill was ambivalent. He liked him, he was on his side, and he was also kind of critical of him. Well, anyway, whatever happened out here in Akron was great. I mean, it's just been wonderful. I never knew Dr. Bob, but I did on one of my last drunks, I called him up. And that was in January of 50. And then that November, Dr. Bob died. And I was then living in Pontiac, Michigan. And oh, did I feel guilty about having called him up. Because I knew he was probably sick when I called him. And I got over that. Later on, I met Dr. Bob's son, Smitty. And there's a terrific guy. Our oldest son lives in Dallas, and when we'd go down to Dallas, we went down there for something they called the Gathering of Eagles. And my wife says, it's the Gathering of Egos. But I really enjoyed doing that, and there were some of the old-timers down there. I remember Circe Whaley and some of the others, great people. That they've gone on now, but they were great people in AA. So anyway, it's been a great trip for me in AA, and I would have left the planet a long time ago without this fellowship. As I said, I got sober in California and then went back out after a short time. But when I went to that state hospital in Nebraska, that turned the tide for me. And my sobriety date, as I said, was April 15th, 1950. I lived 19 years in Jackson, Michigan. It just kind of a fluke thing. I happened to go over to Ann Arbor to give a talk. I was living in Detroit, and a guy came up and handed me his card. It turned out he was an executive with a company in Jackson, and I wound up going to work for him, and that resulted in 33 years of employment. Amazing. Just happened to go over and give that talk, and that's how that happened. Why am I at a loss for words? I never am. What I really want to do, discuss is that I think I'm working on a video that'll be titled, It Happened in Akron. Now, we know that Bill Wilson got sober in New York, and he came out here on a business trip, and it didn't work out well for him, and he felt that he had to get in touch with an alcoholic, and that's how his meeting with Dr. Bob came out. But Bill, his group in New York probably had 20 members when Dr. Bob had 80 members sober out here. And of course, the growth in Akron continued after that. It reached out, the fellow who started AA in Toledo, the one in Cleveland, and all of them, they came out of that Dr. Bob's group in Akron. And there's no question about it, the biggest boost in AA came from Akron and what happened here. And Bill always acknowledged that. The one great thing about Bill, he wasn't afraid to give other people credit. He, in fact, I think some of the people, he gave them too much credit for things that they didn't do. Now, I worked on Bill's biography, which is called Pass It On. What happened, I'd always wanted to do that, and a fellow named Niles Peebles was working on Dr. Bob's biography and Bill's. Well, he wrote Dr. Bob's biography first. They felt that he needed to come out to Akron and interview the people who had known Dr. Bob, and that he would build a book out of that. And I remember feeling a little jealous of him that he had that assignment. Well, then he took on Bill's biography, the one that became Pass It On. And I remember I was down in New York, and he was there in the office working on it. And I remember being a little jealous of him. Well, then I heard that he died. Now, I had nothing to do with that. I had nothing to do with that. But when I heard that he died, I went to New York and threw my hat in the ring. And so for 2 years, I worked on Bill's biography. Well, then they decided that I submitted two drafts, and they decided they still needed some more work on it. So they fired me after 2 years and gave somebody else the assignment. But it finally came out as Pass It On. Well, the good thing about it was all of the interviews and everything that I had done, I used in writing my own book, my search for Bill W. And all of you are welcome to buy a copy of that whenever you want to. And that was published by Hazelden. I also wrote several other books for Hazelden. One of them is a meditation book called Walk in Dry Places. One of the books that gave me the most satisfaction was a book about Ebbe. Ebbe, the man who sponsored Bill W. Now, when I was working on Bill's biography, a couple of people showed up, and one of them was a woman who had taken care of Ebbe in the last 2 years of his life. Now, you know, Ebbe, the guy who sponsored Bill, he went back out and had a lot of trouble the rest of his life. And I remember the thought that crossed my mind was, why write a book about Ebbe? He didn't even stay sober most of the time. Well, then, later on, I was down in Texas, and I met Searcy and some of the older people. And I realized that Ebbe had had some very good years down in Texas. He'd gone down to Texas and stayed there sober 8 years. And the people in Texas just thought the world of him. So I got an assignment to work on the Ebbe book, and it really gave me a lot of satisfaction. You see, if it hadn't been for Ebbe making the call on Bill, well, Bill never would have gotten sober. Hey, Bill was sitting there in Brooklyn Heights, and drunk in November of 1934, and he was just about at the end of his rope. And then Ebbe gave him that call, and that, of course, eventually resulted in the founding of AA. So we owe a great debt to Ebbe, I'm glad to hear your applause. Ebbe died, I think, in 1966, but when he did, Bill wrote a wonderful tribute to him. And you can find that tribute today in the book, The Language of the Heart. Now, by the way, I think that's one of the best things that Bill ever wrote. These are Bill's Grapevine articles, and they're in The Language of the Heart. I was already in AA and sober in 1963 when AA came under criticism for the first time. Harper's Magazine published an article called AA, Cult or Cure. It's written by a guy named Arthur Kane, a psychologist, I guess. Well, I know enough about the writing business. When you give that kind of a title to an article, you're going to come out in a real negative way and call it a cult. And that's what he did. And AAs around the country were just furious. They wrote letters. In fact, I did too, and it was never published, but they were just furious about this. Well, then Bill was still living, and they brought the article to Bill. And Bill said, well, I always knew this would happen, but I didn't think it would be Harper's Magazine. Harper's is kind of an intellectual magazine, and it's read by people who think they're pretty smart. And Bill thought it would be in some other publication. But anyway, he wrote a wonderful article about it for the Grapevine, called Our Critics Can Be Our Benefactors. And that's Bill at his best. The point of his article was, if you have somebody who criticizes you, the question is what they're saying, is that true? Well, if it is, maybe you owe him a debt for pointing it out. there is something you should correct, and they're helping you. So you should even thank them. But suppose it is not true, and it's a kind of a vicious attack, that sort of thing. Well, even then, you don't solve the problem by opposing them or reacting to them. As he pointed out, he said, unreasonable people are stimulated all the more by opposition. In other words, if you oppose them, they just use that as a platform for more criticism. And so he, they published that article, and the guy wrote one more critical article. I think it was published in the Saturday Evening Post. And I think he wanted to become the Ralph Nader of AA. I think he wanted to start a cottage industry by being an ongoing critic of AA. But since nobody really responded to him, why, he just kind of disappeared. Years later, when I was working on Bill's biography, I discovered that he had moved to Yuma, Arizona, and passed away there. But anyway, that criticism didn't hurt us at all. And if you want to read it, why, get a copy of The Language of the Heart. You'll find it in there. I've really kind of almost run out of gas. And one of the things I was going to do was I was going to sing my song. I used to think I was a singer. I was actually in an amateur theater group in Jackson, Michigan, and also a little bit in Toledo. And I did a few musicals. Believe it or not, I was Emil in South Pacific, but I won't sing Some Enchanted Evening tonight. If you want a private audience, well, I'll set something up. But anyway, I wrote the words for this song, and it came from a song called Song for the Myra, a song written up in Canada. And I used the tune, but I wrote the words myself. I was afraid I might get sued for plagiarism of the tune. But somebody said, well, the composer wouldn't even recognize the tune after you singing it. And so anyway, I want to close my talk by singing this song, which is a tribute to Bill and Bob. And it's called Once There Were Founders. Once there were founders, two men we esteem. They had a vision, a sort of a dream. And though they had struggles, they'd never complain. I wish they were with us again. Once there was darkness, no answer was known. Each of us faced a grim future alone. Then came their vision, and new life appeared. Our founders were with us back then. Can you imagine their place in the universe? Higher than princes or kings. They opened the gates to a new way of life and all of the wonder it brings. Once there were founders, we honor them still, a doctor named Bob and a broker named Bill. Dim was the path when their journey began. I wish they were with us again. And over the long years, their stories were foretold, and lost souls began to return to the fold. All that they told us turned out to be true. Our founders were with us back then. Can you imagine their place in the universe, higher than princes or kings? They opened the gates to a new way of life and all of the wonder it brings. Once there were founders, both gentle and kind. They gave us this program. It's yours and it's mine. When we came broken, they helped us to mend. Our founders were with us back then. So remember the gift from the founders we love. With help from our friends and the power above, each day we have is a journey begun. I feel they're now with us again. Yes, I feel they're now with us again.
We close with the Lord's Prayer.
Thank you so much, Mel. You've inspired me. I think I'm going to break out in song next. I want to thank Mel's family. Thank Mel for coming down, taking the time to share with us. I want to thank all the volunteers, the hosts. If you see people with these badges, give them a hug. They've worked hard all weekend, all year, for years. And I want to thank all of you for coming, because without you, there would be no Founders Day. So thank you. And we'll see you at the dance, and we'll see you at year 82.